Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopika Panashyama Kund Radha Kund Giri Govadan Ki Jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Dham Ki Jai. Yamuna Devi Ganga Devi Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Ri Had Madanga Ki Jai. Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Jai Nitai Go Pramanandi Hari Hari Bo. All glorious to the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glorious to the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glorious to the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glorious to the lotus feet of Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Okay, so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 5. Text number 3. Okay. Gignasitam Shushampanam Api Te Mahat Adbhutam Kritavan Bharatam Yas Twam Savata Paribrim Hitam Kinyasitam susampanam Apite mahat adbutam Kritavan bharatam yastvam Savata paribrimhitam Kinyasitam susampanam Apite mahat adbhutam Kritavan bharatam yastvam Zavata paribrimhitam Gigyasitam shushampanam Apite mahat adbhutam Kritavan bharatam yastvam Savata paribrimhitam Vigyasitam shushampanam Gigyasitam shipampanam Vaishnavis. Nasitam sushampanam Apite mahadadbhutam Kritavan yasvam
Sarvartha parivrimhitam
Gigyasitam
Fully inquired.
Shushampanam well versed. Api in spite of. Te yo. Mahad adbhutam.
Great and wonderful.
Kritavan prepared. Bharatam the Mahabharat. Yahatvam, what you have done. Savaata,
including all sequences.
Paribrimhitam, elaborately explained.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Your inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. This is Narada speaking to Vyasadeva. Purport. The despondency of Vyasadeva was certainly not due to his lack of sufficient knowledge, because as a student, he had fully inquired about the Vedic literatures, as a result of which the Mahabharata is compiled with full explanation of the Vedas. Okay. Please repeat after me. Your inquiries
were full.
And your studies
were also well fulfilled.
And there is no doubt
that you have prepared
a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences elaborately explained. Nagyanatamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakamvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Drubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very, very interesting place in Srimad Bhagavatam. Very wonderful verse and pastime that we're discussing here. So, the context is that Vyasadeva is not satisfied. Doesn't seem to be on. Is there anything? Hare Krishna? Okay, Hare Krishna. So, Vyasadeva is feeling despondency. The compiler of the Vedic literatures is feeling despondency. And he does not know why. And he has approached Narada Muni, and Narada Muni here is speaking to him. Your inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled. In the next verse he also goes on to say that, you know, you've done so much, why are you feeling this despondency? My dear Prabhu, Radha Muni addresses him in this way. This pastime has so much philosophical and spiritual significance. So much. From the approach that Narada Muni takes to the understanding of the Vedic literatures to the ability to taste, even the general understanding about knowledge itself, so many things are there. So we wanted to maybe discuss a few of these things. So let's expand out and then let's go in. As a general point, it should be clear to all members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it should be clear to any person in the world who is making some sincere attempt to be God conscious that we are under attack. Factually speaking, we are under attack because this world is a world of relativism, right? So much emphasis on opinion as opposed to authoritative understanding, right? So in this world, everyone has their own opinion, right? Which is actually a very hypocritical consideration because it's an illusion, right? There are so many things that people hold dear, but because of the illusion of this material energy, which is extremely intense and extremely pervasive, right? People have the illusion of what they believe as opposed to what they truly believe. Maya is so pervasive that she exists and permeates the heart of a living entity. You understand? We consider sometimes we're fighting against Maya outside, but you're not fighting against Maya outside. You're fighting against Maya inside. Right? Inside the heart, inside the mind, inside the consciousness. And she's so pervasive that for the majority of living entities, it's a blind sight. There's not even the recognition that she's within. Right? There's not even the recognition that she's within. So what do I mean by this illusion of relativism? If you ask people, do you really believe that it's okay for someone to, for example, rape your parents? Right? They would say no. If you then say to them, well, do you think it's just your opinion? Right? So you have your opinion, it's bad. Someone else's opinion, it's okay. So it's just relative. No one would say yes. Right? There are people generally have very deeply held core beliefs. But when it comes to spirituality, God, then no, it's just your opinion. Right? You have your opinion, we have our opinion, and ultimately, you know, who's to say that anyone's opinion is correct? Which is why the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic literatures is such a threat, because this does not express itself as opinion. Right? As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Adi Atma Vidya Vidyanam. The supreme science of self-realization. Science implies objectively perceivable reality. Objectively perceivable reality. And therefore, it is something that can be tasted if it is properly followed. You see, one of the things that excites me about this pastime is the approach. Vyasadeva is not satisfied. What does he do? He approaches Narada Muni. And Narada Muni is able to explain to him, the reason why you're not actually satisfied is you have failed to fully glorify the Lord. You have failed to produce a literature that completely glorifies the Lord in his full position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that personality to which everyone should, you know, offer service and respect and love and devotion. How does Narada Muni know this? Right? So he's occupying the position of Guru. Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedas. He knows the truth. He's the compiler of this Vedanta. Right? The compiler. What's implied here is something very, very special. And this is one of the reasons why our spiritual culture is structured in a particular way. The greatness of the Vedic literatures and this process of Krishna consciousness is... it is a means by which it transforms the very nature of our perception. Right? Therefore, Narada, by his spiritual perception, he can perceive what the fault is in Vyasadeva. Right? Obviously, when I say fault, I mean on a transcendental platform. We're not qualified to consider the Vyasadeva as a fault. But he can perceive something. The cleansing, the Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, it's not a metaphor for something. Ultimately, how do you perceive reality? What is the means by which a living entity perceives reality? Reality is perceived by consciousness. And by the quality of consciousness, actually more of reality is perceived. To the extent that consciousness is soiled with this materialistic mentality, to that extent it's a certain kind of blindness. So much about reality is not perceived. Right? Until the consciousness, or to the degree that the consciousness is clean, to that degree reality is perceived, because reality in its naked and most pure manifestation is spiritual. Right? Now this has very exciting connotation for us. Why? Because it means that the more our consciousness is pure, the more that when we read these literatures, the more that is actually perceived. And likewise, the more that when we chant the holy names, the more that is actually perceived. When we see the deity, the more that is perceived. And when we serve others,
the more also that is actually perceived. It really is like that. This is the purple of Cheto Dapana Majanam. And that is what is being demonstrated here. Narada is in a superior position. Because of his purity, when Vyasadeva approaches him, he is able to perceive. This is why. Right? This is why. He's exploring, and at a particular point he'll tell him, the reason why you're despondent, the reason why you're not happy, is because you failed to do this. Right? So no one should ever be in any illusion that if you practice Krishna consciousness, you remain the same. You don't. A cleansed consciousness, see, if we change, the entire world is transformed. If the consciousness changes, you will find that the entire experience of reality is actually very, very different. And the experience of spiritual teaching also becomes very, very different. When a pure devotee reads certain pastimes of the Lord, he is actually experiencing as if he was present in those particular pastimes. So this is what we're trying to do. It is not a question of simply philosophical understanding. Right? It is a question of experience and realization. And one of the most important or essential mechanisms is given here. We are dependent upon the darshan and the vision of the devotees, of our association, to give us this insight. It is like Krishna gives them the mail. Right? It is still Krishna. But the devotees are the medium. They are Krishna's voice. Krishna's way of instructing and guiding us. And if you take shoulder of the devotees properly, you see a miracle happen. Because so many things that they will say, they will be inspired within their heart to reveal certain things to us about how we can progress and have a fuller spiritual experience. It is so exciting. That's one point. Okay, let's look at a few other things. So, it's a very interesting point that we can actually destroy people, right? Or a society, civilization can destroy people based upon the knowledge that they give, right? And also the knowledge that they withhold, right? Vyasadeva has done such a great service to society, right? To humanity, to the entire reality, to the entire creation by compiling these Vedic literatures. When we talk about relativism, I think Prabhupada used the word yata tata mata pata. The idea that there are so many different paths, right? But the Mahabharata, the Vedas, they don't say that, right? Ultimately, there is one goal, prema pamata mahan, right? What is the goal? To actually attain pure love for Krishna. That's the goal, one goal. There is not some myriad, idea, right? But people don't understand that. And without the goal, when you lose a reference point, you immediately create a very dangerous and destructive society, because nothing is out of context. Nothing can be understood out of context. Jai Shri Shri Radha Landanishwara Ki Jai. Shri Shri Sitaram Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Palate Subhadra Maharani Shri Shri Gonita Gruparam Shri Prabhupada Maharani. Nothing can be understood out of context. Right? It's a very serious point. What Vyasadeva does with the Vedic literatures is he creates a particular context. And most importantly, he gives a very strong and absolute reference point. Unless someone's existence has a reference point, actually, you can't make sense of the activities. You understand the point? So when you take out the reference point, the goal, which is pure love of God, actually, so many of the things that we do actually don't make sense, right? So, for example, in the material world, they have a big thing about this idea of celibacy, right? You're not having sex. How can this be? Obviously, you guys are repressing yourself, right? I remember we took a group of students to Mayapur. Oh, no, it was a group of adults to Mayapur. And one of the adults, I think she has some background in psychiatry or something like that. And so she was discussing with the Gurukul men. You know, because they're all celibate. And she was saying, you know, this is unnatural. Isn't it the case that, you know, you're celibate, you know, it's bad for your health, etc., etc., etc. And they were explaining, no, it's not, you know, like that. Now, without reference to the goal, and without understanding what is trying to be achieved, and therefore how these activities help you to achieve that particular goal, right? Without that reference point, you can easily, what's the word I'm looking for? You can discredit Vedic literatures, Vedic society, religion. Because many of the things that we believe in the modern world, they have trouble accepting it. Many things, right? Many of the things that we accept without reference to the goal and without reference to certain basic spiritual concepts, it is very, very difficult to accept and understand. So when you destroy the reference point, you immediately discredit that particular type of philosophy. So many things around the Vedas and around Vedic culture don't make sense unless we have this understanding. And what the Vedic literatures do is they produce a context for our activity. You need a context. So therefore, when Prabhupada says read the books, if you don't read the books, the context fades. If we do not read the books, the context that we have begins to fade. You lose a spiritual context and you develop more and more of a material context. Material context means something is implied. What is a material context? What's implied in that? Is that you're the body, therefore life is about gratifying your senses. It is a fundamental philosophical point that permeates the consciousness of the conditioned living entity. Right? They think they don't have a reference point. I'm just trying to have a good time, live my life the way I see fit. No, you have a philosophy. Right? The materialistic demeanor has a philosophy. They don't know it, but they have a philosophy because you can't act without a philosophy. Philosophy means simply your belief about what you are and what will therefore make you happy. You understand the point? Right? What you are and therefore what will make you happy. The Bhagavatam says, yayatma supersedati, right? This devotional service has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. Why? To completely satisfy the self. Isn't that interesting? Right? That you won't be satisfied. The living entity will not be satisfied until and unless they attain to the platform of unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service. Right? They won't be satisfied. In other words, religion isn't even something that you do for God. God is satisfied. Right? If He's not pleased though, you will never be satisfied. Because it's the existential position of the living entity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's see. Mama Eva Amsa. The living entities are my fragmental parts and parcels. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasya shtani indriyani prakriti shtani kashati. The living entities, us, we are part and parcel. So until the part serves the whole, there is no question of satisfaction. There's no question. Right? It's just the very nature of reality. So conditioned life means what? Conditioned life means someone who is trying, you know, with all their strength to fight against the fundamental realities of their nature. Interesting. So, when we talk about the Mahabharata, we understand that it's also explaining Dharma, Artha, Karma and Moksha. But at the same time, and so here it's even talked about, as a result of it, the Mahabharata is compiled with full explanation of the Vedas. At the same time, within the Mahabharata, we have the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita, within that literature, we understand that the essence, the conclusion of all the Vedic literatures is there. Vedescha sarve aham eva vedyo vedantakrit vedavit eva chaham. So ultimately, the conclusion is there. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is so powerful because there is a direct glorification of the Lord. The very direct glorification of the Lord in his pastimes, his loving associations and exchanges with his pure devotees in the topmost transcendental realm. Now, again, another extraordinary subtle point is that personality only manifests to the degree that the particular environment and association is conducive. It is a natural psychology. Personality only manifests to the degree that the environment and the association is conducive. So when do you see Krishna in his fullest manifestation? His fullest manifestation is present in Goloka Vrindavan, amongst the Brijbasis, because that environment and that association, it invokes the fullest manifestation of his personality, qualities and attributes. There's a difference between Raja Krishna and Krishna in, Dwaraka, etc. Even to the point that the form has differentiation. Vasudev Krishna, his form is more kshatriya-like, it's more defined. Gopal Krishna or Raja Krishna, his body, his features are softer. There's an increase in the sweetness, relating and reciprocating with the nature of the devotees there and the particular environment, the sweetness of Vrindavan. So Krishna manifests fully in that divine realm. So all of these subtleties are also present as we come to understand more in the Vedic literatures. Now, as we said, there's a goal, And then, in addition to that, there's also an emphasis. Because you can consider that if we had done this, you've prepared some Vedic literature, some transcendental literature glorifying the Lord, generally no one would say that, you've missed out on something. Generally, for us, that would be a wonderful step up, But for Vyasadeva, there's something more, And this is why we need association and guidance. Because what is emphasized to one individual should not be emphasized to another individual, When you hear a class, this is public forum, So what is explained in the public forum, Prabhupada sometimes explained that in a class you preach for the Kanishtha, It's safe, you give an understanding which is applicable to everyone, general understanding, it's safe for everyone. In the private forum, you preach according to the specific qualifications of the specific individual. Because Krishna consciousness is extremely personal. For someone else, you've written some literature glorifying the Lord in order to preach the glories of Krishna, that's wonderful. For Vyasadeva, you've done the Mahabharata. This is not just literature, this is itihasa. This is actually history. And this can never be forgotten. You've put together itihasa, history. You've divided, Vyasa means divider. You've divided these Vedic literatures in such a way, even Mahabharata, so many unqualified people can still come to the conclusion, but you're despondent. For you, there's something else you should be, there's something further that you have to achieve. We need a living theology, And living means it comes through the association of those who are alive with spiritual practice, spiritual understanding, and spiritual realization. It is a live channel. The Vaishnavas are a live channel through which we will gain further instruction. It is something like Mission Impossible. You sometimes have this mission, and when you reach a particular location, then further instructions will be given. You perform the instruction, you make some progress. When you reach a particular point, now you've come to this point, now further instructions will be given. It is alive. And therefore, it is very exciting for that reason. Now, at the same time, we should always bear in mind that we can read many books. But the goal is not scholarly understanding. Because you can read so much, and therefore have a false sense of one's spiritual level of attainment. There is the jnana and there is the vigyana. There is the philosophical truth and there is the actual degree of realization. We may understand philosophically what? Dehino sminyata dehi kumarnyuvanam jara tata dehantara prapti diratatra namuyate. That we're not the body. The body is going through changes. Okay, but now, what is the level of your realization? Have you realized that? To what degree is that realized? Ultimately, we are meant to come to realization. And with purified senses, it is even possible to directly perceive all of these pastimes taking place. Right? So when the materialists argue, well, how do you know it's true? Do you know that pure devotees, they can perceive the reality of spiritual knowledge by the reading? They read and they can actually sense because the spiritual senses become alive. With spiritual senses, you can also directly perceive a whole range of additional things that cannot be perceived normally by the gross senses. There is spiritual sensitivity that develops in line with spiritual purification. So when pure devotees come before the deities, they can feel, they can perceive that this is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are ways by which advanced devotees, when they are around other devotees, they can perceive the spiritual strength of another individual. Right? They can perceive it. It's not a theoretical thing. It is something that is perceivable. Oh, I can feel that this person has some spiritual strength. They're perceiving these things. So that's how it's a reality. So it's just like, let's see. It's just like if you're studying, some people study English literature, right? So when if you don't study English literature, you read the book, it's a nice story. When you study English literature, you start to understand characterization, metaphor, simile, the use of imagery, characterization, so many things. So when you read your Shakespeare, your Chaucer, then because you've learned to understand the subtleties, you can see how the author's using certain kinds of language, certain tone, euphemism, understatement, overstatement. So you're reading the same thing that someone else is reading, but because you've been trained, you can pick up so many subtleties to what you're reading. Another example, you're brought up in a family of gourmet chefs, right? So a gourmet chef, when they eat the food, they can taste whether the ingredients were fresh ingredients or not. They can taste whether you put too much salt, too much spice, too little salt, too little spice, because their palate is very sensitized or developed. You understand? So when they taste something, they're more conscious of the fine points and the subtle ingredients present within them. Right? Something similar happens in spiritual life. Something similar happens. We have so much to look forward to. Something similar happens. We can perceive, I can see there's certain fine, refined points. As we become refined, our perception also becomes refined. So the devotee should sharpen. And you can actually perceive an entirely different world. If we take this Krishna consciousness seriously, you can perceive an entirely different world and a different internal world. You'll understand so many things. See, right now, the truth of the matter is, we're not even fully aware of our material desires. To perceive your consciousness actually requires a quite profound degree of humility. It's not a joke. That's why when you come to Krishna consciousness, you're so much more enthusiastic and later on you're shocked and sometimes horrified to see what's coming up within your own consciousness. And you may even think, I was purer when I first came. No, Krishna just allowed you to perceive certain things in your consciousness when you're ready. Right? Things will float up from the subconscious. And you know what is one of the most extraordinary things to perceive? One of the most extraordinary things to perceive within our consciousness is just how much we hate and have envy towards Krishna. Right? It'll come. At a certain point, we'll see, you just start to realize, my God, just how much I have envy towards Krishna. Why is he getting all the glorification? Why not me? Huh? Why is everyone worshipping him? Why not me? You know, I'm kind of attractive. I can get a flute. I can do that. It's not a problem. Right? It's serious. Right? That's not a sign of lack of progress. That's a sign that we're progressing, actually. As we become more humble and ready, we'll perceive so many things within us, so many anattas, things that are coming up. My God, I didn't even realize it was there. I'm dealing with one devotee now, he's making mistakes, he's not even conscious. He's not even aware, right? And that's the trick of the material energy. That's why we need association. Krishna consciousness, there's certain levels of spiritual advancement that one simply cannot reach by themselves. It's not possible. So one requires association. And we have to really be sincere. Right? Sincerity, what is sincerity? Sincerity doesn't mean that you want Krishna. That's not sincerity. Sincerity means you want Krishna more than you want the material things. Right? And different kinds of things will come up. Yeah, you want Krishna, that's fine. Right? But do you want him more than this? Right? And then later on, you want Krishna, that's fine. But do you want Krishna more than this? Right? And then later on, you want Krishna, that's okay. But do you want Krishna more than this? Right? That's sincerity. That's sincerity. You have to want him actually more than anything else in this material reality ultimately. Right? Can you raise your hand now and say, I want Krishna more than anything else in reality, subtle and gross. Subtle and gross. Think about it. Right? If not, then it means that we have some work to do. We have work to do. But it is shushukam. It is a joyful service. But beware. See, and this is good because again, that humility. Vyasadeva is emblematic in this lila of humility. You've compiled the Vedic literatures but you're not satisfied. You've come to another person with humility. I'm dissatisfied. I don't even know why I'm dissatisfied. You're going to have to instruct me. What am I doing wrong? What's the problem here? Right? Krishna appreciates that mood. And as is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, the humility, it is the first principle of knowledge. Right? That's the point. Where there's humility, there will always be a flow of wisdom and realization. And where there is not humility, you'll find that your channel of realization knowledge, it will just get closed off. It will shut down. Right? And you'll come back and you'll think, my God, I'm in the material world again. Right? Material world means material consciousness. Right? We're carrying the material world in the mind. Right? Don't worry too much about the outside world. That's not the real problem. The problem is we're carrying the material world in this body, in this mind. Right? And that's where we need to let it go. Right? That's where we need to let it go. A few other points. Okay. So, if we don't cultivate this knowledge, and if we don't understand, as is being demonstrated here, emphasis, as well as the goal, establishing the goal and also knowing what to emphasize in our preaching, we will always be in a problem. You know, unfortunately, we even sometimes have demons who infiltrate spiritual societies. There's one memories of Prabhupada where one Prabhupada's disciple was describing a pastime with Srila Prabhupada. Right? You can find it online. And Prabhupada, in his pastimes of leaving the world, Prabhupada explained to this disciple, he actually mentioned the name of another devotee, and he said that this person is just waiting till I die so he can try and take over the movement. Right? And Prabhupada actually mentioned this person by name. Right? So there's a video, I saw it myself online. It's Giriraj Maharaj speaking to another devotee, and this devotee is recalling this pastime where Prabhupada said it. And it's a fact. I know other times, I remember hearing about this from one devotee years ago. There's one of our communities in America, and there was one person who was coming to the community and asking questions. And later on, the disciple of the guru who was residing in that community said, "Oh, you know, Maharaj, you know, this person seems so interested in Krishna consciousness." Maharaj said, "That guy, he's just CIA, you know, like that, you know." It is the case that sometimes people will come into the spiritual societies factually, right, in order to check things out. And therefore, they can be the most destructive. And one of the things that destroys spiritual culture and spiritual society is, and this is very important, this is the subtleties of preaching. When you give restriction without knowledge, right? I come across so many people who were brought up in the Hindu culture and they're ready to reject this literature outright or pay lip service to it while they completely do their own thing. Right? I remember, it's interesting because this purport talks about the Mahabharata. I remember coming home one evening and I was in Doti Tilak and there was one person and they saw me. I think I was reading a literature and they could see I was a devotee. They said, so you're Hare Krishna? Yes. So you know that the Mahabharata is all mythology, don't you? Right? So I said, no, it's not mythology. I said, it's all real. You know? And they wanted to argue the point. Right? They wanted to argue the point because of this foolishness. Right? This foolishness. They think, oh, it sounds fantastical, so it can't be real. No, actually, every single word, it is real. Right? It can be perceived as real. Even to this point, you can go to India, Kurukshetra still exists. Right? And there are other proofs as well. Right? For example, there was, I think some studies found that even within the Mahabharata, there are astronomical calculations, right, which can be found to relate to the timings of these events in the Mahabharata. Even from modern astronomical calculations, the things which are said in there can also be corroborated empirically. So many things. But when you give restriction, or you should live this way, act in this way, and you don't give knowledge, an intelligent person will end up rejecting this. Right? Intelligence and knowledge are not the same thing. Right? Intelligence has to have the knowledge to chew on. It has to have the knowledge to process. So someone who's intelligent, you give them some restriction, you don't tell them why. At a certain point they think, this is ridiculous. You know, they have all these kinds of silly rules. I ask questions, no one can tell me why they follow these silly rules. I'm not going to follow it, I'm intelligent. And that same person will grow up and they'll tell other people and they'll do it with a conviction that, yeah, it's all rubbish, you know. I remember someone recently asking, they weren't asking me, they asked someone else who told me about it. So what does your religion say about the role of this group or that group in light of what we now have to understand in terms of modern society? Right? An intelligent person was asking this question. Right? Now if that person is not given the goal, you start the reference point. What is the purpose of life? That's where we begin. Now, understanding this, then we look at the other activities and see how they help us to achieve this goal. Without understanding the goal, nothing works. Right? Oh, you guys are sentimental, you know, you just can't have a good time, you follow all these antiquated, foolish ideas with no reason. No, there's a very good reason, because this helps us to achieve this goal. Now, this helps us to achieve the goal. Now, we do this because it helps us to achieve the goal. Right? We should be very clear on that. Right? The fanatics are almost preaching against us. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it before. Sometimes you have these, like, you know, Christians, and they'll just be standing there talking and talking and talking and talking. And if you look at how people are responding to them, right? If you notice, many people, they're scowling, negative, right? Critical, right? Maybe I don't know. Maybe one person in 100 or 1,000 may consider, you know, that this person has something that I should listen to, right? But then you look at the other side. Have you seen the effect of the Harinam? You see when the devotees go out on Harinam, you see, you know, on Saturday night Harinam, when you get to Leicester Square, people, it's like the holy name, it just draws people. It has such a an attractive potency. They just stare around, you know, and even people who are miserable, they'll come and they'll sing, dance, join in, and at least for that time that they're in contact with that spiritual energy, they're being cleansed. So powerful. Such a very different effect. Huh? This is so important. We must take shelter of these books to remind us, why am I doing this? Because unless you're clear on the goal, what we do doesn't even make sense. Huh? Unless we're clear remembering the goal, what we do in many cases won't make sense, and after a while, we'll forget. Right? And Maya has two potencies. She tries to make the living entity forget. Right? This covering potency and this potency of pulling the person down. Huh? Slowly. Very, very slowly, very intelligently, you just forget. You know, why am I doing this? Why do I have to get up in the morning? Why austerities? Why association? Why respect for our seniors? Why take guidance? We'll forget. Huh? If we're not very, very, very careful, very attentive, and always working on ourselves. Huh? So, another point that's also very interesting is in relation to the Mahabharata. There's always sometimes this ignorance. So, you know, do you accept the Shruti or the Smriti, right? You know, and many Hindus, no, I accept the Vedas, the four Vedas. You know, this other stuff, no, it's not necessary. But you know what's funny about that, right? According to the Smriti, the Mahabharata is the fifth Veda, right? So within the Smriti, it also says that Shruti is also a Veda, right? That's the actual meaning of Purana. Pura Nava. Pura means old, Nava means new. Purana means the old made new. That's actually the point, right? So when people go and say, well, you know, we don't accept the Shruti, right? You know, you guys follow, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Purana, but we don't accept the Shruti. We accept Smriti, right? No, but the Smriti says that the Shruti is also Veda, right? So if you accept Smriti, you must accept Shruti, right? That's just people who say it, just people who don't know what they're reading. They've not read the literature. They don't understand it.
Are you saying Shruti and Smriti, the Puranas and Smriti?
The Puranas are also considered to be Veda, authentic Veda, and there are statements in the Smriti that state that. That's what I'm saying.
In the Shruti,
no, there are statements in the Smriti, right, in the Vedas. You know the original four Vedas, yeah? So it says that the Shruti is also to be considered within that same canon of Vedic literature. It's not like something that's like secondary or, you know, of a lesser caliber, yeah? It's all part of the same class, ultimately.
The Shruti is the four
Vedas. No, it's the fifth Veda. That's the
Because
my mistake.
Could you repeat what you said? It's very interesting, but I just
yes, sure.
Locked in on the...
So I think I got it the wrong way around. So the Shruti is the four Vedas, but within the statements of those four Vedas, yeah, it also says that which is remembered, i.e. the Puranas, my mistake, is also to be considered to be non-different. It's within that original class of literature. Yeah, like that. So sometimes people accept one class but not the other. But if you accept one class, you must accept the other class also. Thank you for that point. Okay, thank you. And I think it's 8:30, so we'll stop, see what questions people have. Questions, comments, yes. Very good point. Very good point. This is where preaching with realization becomes so important, and emphasis. I mean, if you know, first of all, it's going to spread. Let's be very clear on this. There's no question, with or without us, this spiritual teaching culture is going to spread because it's empowered by the Lord Himself. Right? So it's a foregone conclusion. However, now within us, we have to really be concerned for the well-being of other people. if we're concerned about the well-being of others, we try to understand where they're coming from in order to see how to package the teaching in such a way that they can say yes to Krishna. Right? There's two classes, there's two categories in which the acceptance takes place, right? For example, if we go on Harinam, it's good if the Harinam is nice, ordered, structured, you know, it's nicely performed, the singer is singing in a nice melodious way. Why? You could say, well, you know, that's not so important, the purity is the most important thing. Yes, it is. Purity is important, but for their conscious acceptance, is the packaging and how it's presented is essential. Right? Now, what the purity does is, whether they're conscious of it or not, it will cleanse the heart. You understand the point? So we want to invoke two effects in the individual. We want to be a channel for their purification. They can't tell how pure the singer is, right? They can't tell, but that will affect them unconsciously. So we want to be a channel for their purification, which will affect them unconsciously. But on the conscious level, we want them to appreciate Krishna consciousness and to think, this is something that I can look into, accept or honor to whatever extent. That's on the conscious level. So consciously, the presentation should be good, and make sure above all else that it's done with purity. You see how it works. Now, further to that, that requires compassion. Where are they coming from? Right? Sometimes, to be honest, it astounds me how quickly we forget how we came. Right? We forget. You know, someone is showing some interest, but we push what we are inspired by at this particular point in Krishna consciousness. But is that going to help that person? Preaching means you first have to hear and try and understand them. It's an activity in selflessness. So first, learn about the individual, right? Prabhupada makes this point very nicely. First canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 4, first verse, purport, right? One must not change anything, Prabhupada says in the purport. At the same time, one must be able to present the teaching in such a way that is suitable to the particular audience. Prabhupada says, this is called realization, right? First canto, chapter 4, first verse, purport, Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Then they'll be able to consciously say yes to Krishna. Right? You understand where the person is coming from, and then you see, what do I say? How do I interact with this person to take the next step? Not to jump to the love of God. That's going to be coming. Right? And we can establish that that's the goal. That's okay. But the truth is, for preaching to be effective, you want them to take the next step. The next step could be that they take a book. The next step that they come to a program. The next step is that you take their details and you have a chat and give them a bit more information. What's the next step for the individual? And all of these steps build up. I remember someone asking me years ago, isn't Krishna, if you practice Krishna consciousness, isn't it a leap of faith? This is the kind of rubbish that materialistic people come up with, right? There's no such thing as a leap of faith. Right? People who've joined this movement, who have sustained their practice of Krishna consciousness, there was no leap, there were steps. Steps of faith. Simple, easy to digest, easy to accept, digestible steps of faith. You have to make it so easy for people. Oh, I can do that. Oh, just take a book and read. Oh, I can do that. Right? It's very small, easy stuff. I can do that. Even I can do that. Or why don't you try this chanting, you know, maybe around, you know, I can do that. You understand the point? That's how we'll do it. So purity and presentation. And don't think the two are different. Right? As I think we explained in the last class, there's two types of intelligence. Right? One type of intelligence is inherent to the particular karma that we have based upon our material body. The second type of intelligence is referred to by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, Bhajatam Pritipurvakam, Dadami Buddhi Yogamtam, Yenamamupayanti Te. That second type of intelligence is coming from the quality of our devotion, in which Krishna is helping us to see how to present things so that people will come to Krishna consciousness. Right? That's why when someone comes to Krishna consciousness, we say that they're Sudmadasha. They're the most intelligent. Irrespective of whatever kind of background, it makes no difference, because whatever material intelligence they have is being supplemented and complemented by the spiritual intelligence to the degree that Krishna is giving it to them. Does that answer your question? Thank you very much, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu, maybe the last question. Yes.
So often what we find though is that people, well, generally the experience, you also said it's spirituality and experience, which
yes.
suggests that it's objective.
Yes.
In the sense that it's very personal.
Yes.
And so how to bridge that gap and really come to the steps.
Yes. Good point, good question. So sometimes this is a challenge also. Well, you know, yeah, even you guys all practicing your Krishna consciousness, it's nice, it's, you know, but you're all having a different experience, yeah? But actually, the nature of reality is that there are certain... I'll share a point in relation to this, because I didn't mention this in the class. But there is a statement by Shiva, when he's saying that Shukadev Goswami and I understand the meaning of and the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva, he may or may not know, right? Some, this is actually explained. I was just listening and researching this pastime to something about this. So on the transcendental platform, there's one thing to understand the philosophical truths, but also the range of mellows, that's also tasted differently according to the individual. Yeah. So there is even some personal, I wouldn't call it subjectivity, but there is personalism on the spiritual platform, because, for example, ultimately everyone has their own rasa, right? And therefore, the mood of Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, you know, this is different from the mood of Chaitanya Bhagavat, because the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat, he's a cowherd boy, right? Vrindavan Das Thakur, he's a cowherd boy. So he's tasting sometimes the same pastime, but from a different perspective. Whereas Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, has a different rasa, right? So he's tasting it actually at a closer proximity, it's considered, you know? So there is personalism, but there are certain features of the ultimate reality which is shared. Right? So it is objective in that sense. Right? The majority, I would say, the majority of those defining features are objective. Right? The nature of God in the sense that the form of Krishna, how he associates with the devotees, that the nature of the soul as being completely immaterial, completely spiritual. These are subjective facets. Right? And then within that platform, there are personal differences because of our personal differences in position. Right? Therefore, you have two statements by Prabhupada. Prabhupada will sometimes tell people that, you know, when devotees are in an unqualified sense, we're talking about Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, Prabhupada actually smashed them and said, no, for you, you know, they're not different. These different rasas are not different. So for you, they're all the same. But Prabhupada does say that there are differences. There are gradations. So it's like this. I'm standing outside and I'm looking up at a skyscraper, right? I'm looking up to the top floor of the skyscraper. From anyone who's standing on the street, right? Looking at that top category, it's just all the same. It's just a higher position. If I'm on that floor, if I'm in the building on floor number 100, when I'm on that platform, then I can differentiate. Okay, there are fittings on the ceiling, there's a carpet on the floor, there are some furnishings which are at this height, some furnishings at this height. So when you're in the building, when you're on the transcendental platform, then you may emphasize the distinctions. But when we're trying to get onto the transcendental platform, from that position, no, it's all the same, right? It's regarded all the same. We have to be in a particular position to make a healthy distinction, right? And that healthy distinction means that there's a certain qualification we've already achieved, okay? So it is objective reality, but it's objective reality with some personal features, right? Some distinct personal features. It's just like, you know, you have your mum, right? So she is a person, it's an objective reality. But there's a difference in the way that you experience her based upon you being her son, and the difference that in the way that her husband experiences that relationship, and the difference in the way that her father experiences that relationship. So it's still objective, but the difference in experience is based upon the position. I don't know if that in some way clarifies.
For an outsider,
yes.
Somebody who's not in
conflict. Yes.
They can very easily say, well, this is your subjective experience. I don't think God actually...
No, but you see, the emphasis is on the word subjective. The emphasis is on the word experience. So we have to they have to consider, he's giving an experience. This devotee is giving an experience against your speculation. Right? Speculation means what? Speculation means I'm imagining what something is like. Right? And as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, the materialistic demeanor can never approach a supreme autocrat. Right? The materialistic demeanor can never approach a supreme autocrat. In the introduction to the Brahma Samhita, if I remember correctly, it says, the phenomenal attraction is often found to tempt sentient beings to try to enjoy their variegated position as opposed to undifferentiated monism. People are so much apt to indulge in transitory speculation, even when they are to educate themselves about a situation that lies beyond their empiric area or experiencing jurisdiction. I know it sounds very complex. All he's saying is that people try to speculate about God. Right? That's all. Right? So it's not that the emphasis is on subjective. The emphasis is on experience versus speculation. Someone has tasted the food and they're telling you how it tastes from their direct contact. And you have never tasted the food and you're arguing with them about how I don't believe it tastes like that. It's your opinion. No, they've tasted it. That's the point. It's their taste that they're arguing with. So why don't they taste it first and then argue? That's our argument back. You taste the food first. Don't argue with me about whether it's salty, whether it's savory or sweet. When I've tasted the sweet rice and you're standing there speculating, well, in my opinion, how do you know it's sweet? It could be this, it could be that. If I put the food in my mouth, what are you talking about? You know? Either you're going to put the food in your mouth or you admit that you have no experience of it whatsoever. And all you're doing is trying to imagine. How can you imagine what something could taste like? It's absurd. Absolutely absurd. Anyway, I should stop there because we've gone over time. Please forgive me. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Okay, please forgive my... No, please don't say it. Please forgive my going over time. And I'm not sure who's making announcements, or if the announcement schedule. I don't have any, you know, if there's any Sankirtan schools. You should read that. You should read out this course. Oh, please.
I don't have any book scores, but I've got something from Radha's boutique. One book distributed for £101.54. And then in Govinda's restaurant, we distributed prasad to a total of 359 guests for 2,247 Lakshmi points. The only announcement I can remember is from 2:30 to 4:50 in the temple room. In the temple room, there'll be a special program happening for some teachers. We'll need all the space available, so during that time, the temple room will be closed to guests. But then it reopens at 4:15 for the RT. Okay, so I'll just say the prayer. Dear Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara,